Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and welcome to the D-Word podcast, where we talk dementia. This week's guest is nutritional therapist Nikki Sainty. Now, an expert in her field, Nikki wasn't always involved in nutrition.
Yeah, thank you, Pete. I actually, at the age of 40, decided to retrain as a nutritional therapist. So this is my second career, if you like. And really what led me into this was previous to that, for my whole life before that, I was in a very fast-paced environment working for a big company, which was obviously exciting in many ways, but it took me all over the country traveling. So I found I was eating, just I was grabbing and going from garages. I was working night shifts, day shifts, perhaps in the car for 5 hours or so. So actually, I was really unhealthy. And my own journey actually took me 5 years to get pregnant. And so that was a real wake-up call to me, because obviously that started ringing alarm bells. So that was my first wake-up call. So actually I came to it through that, and I just started to change one thing at a time. So first of all, I cut coffee out, for instance, and actually my headaches went, so I started to feel better. Then I started to cut tea out, drink more water, try and change my diet, exercise. And I've always exercised, but I exercised more. So I really did do it steadily. And I thought, you know what, there's something in this, because the way that I was eating then to what I was eating previously was a whole 360 turnaround. And I thought, there's really something in this. And that really ignited me then to actually go out and train myself to become a nutritional therapist, which I did. And I trained with a school in Stroud. So that's quite far from me, because I'm based in East Yorkshire. But they really appealed to me. They're very natural, naturopathic and organic, which sat with my principles. So, yeah, so a new career was born at the age of 40. And actually, that coincided as well with my dad being diagnosed with a grade 4 brain tumour, glioblastoma. And that was completely out of the blue. We had no brain tumours whatsoever in the family, nothing like it before. So for me, that was, you know, just a huge another turning point in my life, where I just thought, and obviously I know kind of how my dad ate, I know how he lived. And so I thought, do you know what, I've really got to kind of step in now and you know, get serious about this and actually make it a profession. So that's what I did, Pete. So I had the two big wake-up calls from my own personal, obviously, and my dad. And that's kind of where I found myself now.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's a great story and a great thing of, you know, it's never too late to change course and do what you believe in. Interesting, you said the thing about coffee and tea, actually, because they're two of the things that I've cut out and feel I feel better for it. And yet we're kind of obsessed, really, aren't we? You know, the English are obsessed with the first thing someone offers you is a cup of tea.
You are completely right. We are avid tea drinkers here and coffee drinkers. And I mean, I'm really pleased, actually, Pete, that you shared that, because it's crucial about tea and coffee. And it's actually one of the first things that we would look at as a naturopathic nutritional therapist, because tea and coffee is so dehydrating to the body. So actually, when we're looking at kind of, you know, thirst, being internally dehydrated, obviously that can drive blood pressure up. So we're looking at all those things. So actually, just by either cutting down or cutting out tea and coffee, you know, people tend to feel tons better, more hydrated. Then obviously people will then start drinking more herbal teas, which are hydrating. So that's a big turnaround for somebody. Absolutely.
And I guess a big message to get across, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to labour the point too much, but, you know, you see a film or whatever and someone has a shock and the first thing they've sat down is have a cup of tea with 3 sugars in it.
On points, because obviously if the tea goes, the sugar goes, the coffee goes, the sugar goes. And also as well, sometimes the milk can be problematic for people, so that goes as well. You know, and sometimes people are literally living on coffee, you know, and sometimes coffee and cigarettes, because, you know, let's face it now, you know, many people are so stressed in this, you know, high pressured environment, you know, they might need 4 or 5 cups just to get through the morning. or perhaps, you know, if they've got a long shift, or the perhaps what night shift workers, they rely maybe on caffeine to actually get them through, you know, that shift. So, but obviously then that puts us in the stress response. So then that's how we then dehydrate the body. So yes, it's one of the most powerful things you can do, Pete.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that interested me, I mean, you know, knowledge in nutrition has definitely increased over the years, and it's been linked to things like heart health. But I feel that, you know, obviously we're a dementia-based show, but its links to brain health are something that people still don't quite associate.
Yes, yep. And I do think with brain health, sometimes people don't think about it until later on in life. And perhaps that's part of kind of a message that we do need to get across, because, you know, if we are finding ourselves in cognitive impairments, going towards dementia, Alzheimer's, we've got many, many years of the body, you know, being displaced long before that. And we might have signs and symptoms such as, you know, chronic headaches, chronic dehydration. We might develop diabetes, perhaps. We might be overweight, obese. But we've got this path which leads us then, unfortunately, perhaps, you know, to a weakness, which could be a genetic weakness, maybe within the family. But I think the important point to raise is, even if we have got some risk genes, should we say, we can, the power of epigenetics, which is the lifestyle factors, so we're just talking about drinking tea and coffee, hydrating the body, are absolute paramount to keeping well for long periods of time. So yeah, I think brain health, Pete, is not unfortunately thought about until later on in life, because, you know, generally in your 20s, 30s, 40s, people are just, you know, feel okay, don't they, you know? So they're not thinking about what might come later on down the line, unfortunately. And then obviously it catches us out.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're in tune with the D Word podcast, where I'm chatting to my guest, nutritional therapist Nikki Sainty.
Definitely. And, you know, this is kind of where I work with people and, you know, help them, if you like, change the diet. So, you know, we'd look at kind of what they're eating. And let's take your example of tea and coffee. So, you know, we've got maybe 4 or 5 cups within a day. We might have, you know, cereals, just commercial cereals for breakfast with milk, sandwich for lunchtime with crisps and a can of Coke. And then we might have like maybe a pasta and garlic bread for evening meal, and then maybe some chocolate crisps that we've grabbed during the day because we've been busy. Well, all of that type of food is just quick carbohydrates, tends to sugar very quickly in the body, damages the body cells and the vascular system. So obviously we're linking that up to the brain, you know, and it puts us in a place of dehydration. So, but that's, if we think about, you know, busy working parents, if we think about, you know, those out on the road like I used to be, you know, perhaps those that are looking after elderly relatives as well that are also got their own family and the stretch. So many people are in this grab and go, if you like. And I understand why people do it. And once we strip all that back and we explain to them what's happening with inside the body, and we start putting in water, fiber, all leafy green veg, and then we add on the colour, we'll put in a palm-sized piece of protein, and then let's get in those essential fats, because it's the essential fats and the water that will hydrate the body and really get that fluidity moving, which is crucial when we need that communication that's obviously needs to go on between the brain for it to operate at its optimum level.
Yeah, I think you demonstrate there. I mean, when many people think of diets, they're almost, you know, front page of the newspaper, the X plan diets or whatever. And it's very general, whereas, you know, as we do in dementia world, everyone is different, and you've really got to, you know, hone it down and concentrate on the person.
Definitely, because it's the doability for that person as well. You know, we could come up with what we think is the healthiest diet in the world, but if that person can't implement it because they've not got that support network or they're too busy, so it's really working at where that person is at within their lifestyle. So it's a great point, that, Pete. And that's exactly where we do work as nutritional therapists, is with individuals. So we take into account, if you like, their life as a whole, what times they might eat, that's quite crucial, the quality of food that they're eating, what they're drinking, you know, are they actually moving the body and, you know, getting, you know, a bit of movement in, a bit of exercise? What's the social connection like? You know, because if we feel disconnected from people or we're very isolated, we're not using our conversation, you know, obviously, if we're not using it, then obviously we're losing it in some kind of respect. So, you know, we're taking into account, if you like, that full 360 view on a person's health, and we're actually helping them change it step by step. So we might start off very, very slowly, and, you know, we might look at the diet and kind of, you know, just start to get that trimmed up. And then as that person can implement that, and it's become part of their everyday life, then we'll get a bit more, okay, then let's start bringing this ingredient in, let's do this. And we'll start adding a bit more complexity. But, you know, going in at kind of top end is not usually helpful to people because it's the reality of their situation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've learned a lot in doing this show, that talking to experts like yourself in various areas. And I think the one thing that comes across is, you know, you just made the point how important it is to have a holistic approach, not just put nutrition into a box along with all the other things, but, you know, look at the whole 360, as you said.
That's it. You've got to, yeah, because, you know, stress, any level of stress affects the body. So when we're trying to rehydrate somebody, we're looking at the level of stress as well in their life. So we're looking at other life factors, why something might be occurring, and we'd peel it right back as well for them. You know, so we'd be looking at going back over a couple of generations, what's being passed down from grandma and granddad on both sides. You know, then what's coming from mum and dad, if people obviously know this information, you know, and then actually what has their journey been? You know, what's their experience been? And so we're coming right up to the point, and we can usually like weave a path to help people then understand why they're feeling like they are right now. So you're almost knitting together a bit of a life story for them, which hands them back their health and removes some of that stress, Pete, because people sometimes can't understand why they've got chronic headaches or why they've got joint aches or how they feel like X, Y, and Z. And actually just being able to hand the story back to them empowers that person, you know. And I think that when we're looking at symptoms in general, people, we find them uncomfortable, don't we? Because, you know, we don't want to have a headache. So, you know, people might reach for paracetamol, for instance. But actually, if we've got a headache, there's a reason for it. The body doesn't just think one day, I'm going to have a headache, I'm a little bit bored. You know, there's a reason for that. And we don't need to overanalyze every single headache. But in general, if something's reoccurring, then we're thinking, actually, you know, the body's sending me a message here. What's the message? What am I doing? Am I stressed? Am I overworking? Am I not sleeping? You know, am I spending too much time in front of a blue light? You know, plugged into social media. I've not seen my friends. I'm, you know, so exactly. We're taking that whole 360 view. You know, how do they live? You know, even down to, you know, what time are they perhaps starting to eat? What time do they finish eating? Because actually, if that person can't rest and digest and clear out the body overnight, because actually we've just eaten a meal at 9 o'clock because we've just got in an hour ago. So we're rushing something, but then we're up at 6 and we're out again. And actually I'm having breakfast on the go again at 7. The body's not even had chance to recalibrate right throughout the night. So I'd be looking at times as well as stress, all the external factors. You know, what toxins are incoming for that person? What career do they do? You know, if we've got a painter, then I'd be looking at toxic fumes as well coming in, absolutely. You know, if we've got a farmer, we might be looking at pesticides. So we could be thinking, you know, a myriad of things that are contributing to this person's symptomatic picture. Before that, so when we're looking at generations, and we can look at, there's a study, and it's called the Dutch Winter Famine Study, which was a really unfortunate situation. You're probably familiar with that, but that kind of proved how things are passed down transgenerational. And then we've got the womb environment. So what, you know, what was not just mum, but what was dad doing as well? You know, was mum quite happy and not stressed? Is that she in a good relationship? Does she feel emotionally supportive? What was she eating? What was she doing? You've got all that expression going on within the womb. So you've got all this pre, if you like, this memory coming in before you're born. And then, of course, sometimes we're born naturally, sometimes we're born by C-section. So that's going to affect us as well. Sometimes we're bottle fed, sometimes we're breastfed. That's also going to affect us. And absolutely, through those first early years, you know, how's our diet? You know, are we in a happy environment? Do we feel loved and nurtured? That's crucial. So, you know, we talk about all this with somebody and go right through their decade to decade, and we're noting what's happened. You know, how many antibiotics have been kind of in there, and think that would alter the gut microbiome. So we're thinking about everything that would come, if you like, to a person's load and contribute to that overall load. So, yeah. Absolutely crucial, you know, and almost, yes, when we get to kind of like 15, 25, we've got those turning points, and the body is obviously much more capable, as we know, when we, you know, speaking kind of, I can now, certainly a bit older, you know, what my body could do in its 20s in some respects, can't do now, but in many respects, I'm much more healthy than I was in my 20s. So yeah, it's kind of taking where you're at that point, but it's never too late. Even if you've had the first 20, 30 years, I would say, even 40 years, where you've kind of really had that hard lifestyle, if you make a decision to say, do you know what, actually now I am really, this is what I need to do now. I'm just going to, you know, get some basics in place, because the basics do 80% of the work. People can start to really turn that around, you know. So I just want to really be able to get the message across to him, empower people that it is never too late to make significant changes within your health, you know. And many things are actually, you know, we can start to peel back those symptoms and bring the body back to some type of balance.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to getting the message across, the media obviously play a, you know, a fairly big part in that. And I guess that can be a double-edged sword as well, because it'll get the message out, but sometimes, you know, the quality of that message that comes out may spread false hope, may be very generic. And, you know, quite rightly, people get confused. You know, am I supposed to eat this? Can I eat that? Or whatever. And it seems to change.
Absolutely spot on there, Pete, because when people generally come to myself and likely other nutritional therapists, though obviously I can't speak for everybody, you know, they are they're confused. So that's a great point, because I often find with the press, you know, they'll take the highlight or the top end of perhaps a study without the context, and then we're not looking at somebody's life. And so I'm going to use a prime example here, because I've been almost fighting this one for years, which is eggs. And God knows, Pete, how many times eggs have been in the press negatively, and, you know, we shouldn't eat eggs, you know, and eggs contribute to heart disease and blah, blah. But what we don't know in that context, actually, are people eating 3 Mars bars a day when they're eating, and they just happen to be eating eggs at the same time? So we've got to, you know, and obviously, to be fair to the press, obviously they want to sell papers, they want to sell news. So actually, they need to have a headline that's going to grab attention. But then our job is to start unpicking that and putting the perspective behind it. You know, so I am, you know, if you like, not firefighting, but it's about what I found is very helpful for the client when they're confused, is educating them. You know, and we would do that as part of, you know, the therapy, if you like, in the session, you know, they'll ask my view on something and I'll explain why I think that's healthy and how it can fit into their lifestyle. And so going back to what we were speaking about earlier, we've always got to take that person, that 360 view. You know, actually, eggs might be an irritant for somebody if actually they're having an allergic response to them, and they maybe wouldn't know that if they're not at the EpiPen level, but actually they could be causing some issues in the body. But generally speaking, eggs are one of the healthiest foods you could eat if you're eating an organic free-range egg. And I will stress that, because if they're not organic, then they're pumped with chemicals and growth hormones, and that obviously then is within the egg that you're eating. So that's what I would advocate, because when we're looking at an egg, it's a perfect protein score, and it's also got the healthy fats inside, and it doesn't raise blood sugars, which obviously we know how much sugar tends to be hidden in processed foods these days. So yeah, so that's what I would say. And I don't think the press would like me for that very much, Pete, because that's quite a boring analogy, and it's going to take the fear away from eggs, but that is the reality.
Yeah, and I think you make an important point there, and that's the why in any form of education. It's no good just telling people to do something, but if you actually explain all the background and why it's going to be a good thing, then, you know, obviously that is so much more powerful.
Yes, definitely. And that's how you get change with clients, because when they've got all these mixed messages, and obviously now we've got the explosion of social media, haven't we, which we didn't have years ago. So again, we've got, you know, lots of people blogging, posting, etc., and all perhaps with good intention, which is fine. But again, that individual's getting bombarded with so many multi-messages they don't know. So they've tried a little bit of that, tried a little bit of this, and that's not right. So then they've gone to that, and it's like it's bouncing a ball off various walls. And then the ball just feels all, you know, out of balance because they don't know what to do next. And that's exactly, so it's almost then taking that person, look, it's okay, let's have a chat. So for instance, you know, I would consult with somebody for around an hour and a half at a first appointment, because I'm really keen on kind of talking them through some of the messages that they might find confusing, and obviously what's relevant to their lifestyle, and putting it into context. It's the context, isn't it, Pete, that's really key for somebody. And once they understand the context, they can then take away those key headline messages and then actually do something with them.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're in June with the D Word podcast, and this week's guest, nutritional therapist Nikki Sainty.
It is. And the reason is, Pete, I think, and I believe this, is because we live in such a pressured, fast-paced world. You know, if we go back a couple of generations to say like grandma and granddad, and they actually, if you like, came back now, I think they would be completely shocked at the pace. And obviously, you know, there was maybe more manual and hard workers perhaps, but if you think the foods was much cleaner, everything was much more manual, home cooked, fresh, etc. But what's happened over the years is that, you know, if we go back to the 1950s, you know, where people dancing and like, if you like, social clubs was the entertainment. So actually people was even active dancing when there was drinking. So there was on the feet even on a night, you know, and then there was actually, you know, perhaps before freezers and fridges, or if certainly if you could afford one, you know, you would be either having an allotment or you'd be walking for fresh fruit daily and vegetables daily. So again, the exercise was then, if you think how we've declined, so obviously, yes, convenience meals came in. If you think about the 80s, microwaves came in, that was the dinners. So people were sat down with a tray watching the show and eating. So, you know, 90s, we have the explosion of alcohol. So it's, and now we don't even need to leave the sofa to actually get a meal, because actually we can just order one online and on, you know, and then either, I don't know, Deliveroo or another company will come. So the only reason we've got to get off the sofa now, Pete, is to actually answer the door to the delivery company and then we eat it. So our whole lifestyle has completely spun around, you know, I believe kind of in the last 70 years. And then if we look at the line of disease or dis-ease that's gone up, you know, we're moving less, we're eating more and perhaps more processed. You know, we can see that clear, if you like, or I like to think correlation. So yeah, taking into account that full, you know, social media, blue light, people are not going to bed because they're flicking through. So there's so many things, Pete, in this busy lifestyle, and people are trying to pack so much within a day, which is why it's appealing to get the convenience food, you know. So it's the doability. And there's lots of nice clean companies out there, you know, which now, I don't know, we've got no affiliate here, but just naming a few, HelloFresh, I think there's Gusto and any other similar, you know, where they deliver the fresh ingredients for people and they can cook and that type of thing. So I found that those can help some clients, you know, take away the thinking about what to cook. And so really that's, again, it's, once we know somebody's lifestyle and how, what their challenges are, we can then look at other healthy ways to get them in, to move them away from the takeaways and the convenience, but actually still help them operate how they need to operate within that day. And if their day is full on, asking them to cook everything from fresh is usually not doable. So they won't do it because it's overwhelming. And then that would add more stress to the body, which obviously is not good, because then that'll dehydrate the body. So, yeah, so always working on that individual level and that whole doability and practicality, somebody's, you know, being able to actually do what you're asking them to do.
Yeah, you know, I think back to my my grandparents. Granddad had an allotment. They were eating vegetables from his allotment. He had blackberry bushes in the garden. And it was, okay, they were, you know, perhaps the meat and two veg generation, but around that, there was a lot going on. And I think it's kind of interesting concept here, because some of those people are now in care settings, and that's what they've been used to. So I guess getting this message across to them would not be all that difficult.
No, absolutely not. No, because it is, if you like, what I really enjoy is going back to basics. So it's almost if our grandmas and granddads wouldn't recognise it, should we be eating it, really? Should we be consuming that? And so when we actually take that approach, it takes away all the confusion that we're here, because it's really stripping back. You've just said meat and two veg. Well, if it's quality meat and you've got your veg in there, and okay, ideally I would say more veg, but actually we'd have done all the things like just eating water. We wouldn't have had a pudding every single meal, because actually we probably couldn't afford it then, or the general population, you know. So it would be fruits, and perhaps a pudding would be a treat on the weekend. So there'd be things, there was a lot of things then, not in terms of just what we was eating, but the quantity and the times, and there was routine. If you think that we was playing outside, children used to be outside on the bikes all day in the fresh air and the sunshine, whereas obviously now it's, you know, it's much different. So it's almost, we've had a complete reversal. So for me, a very simple message is actually going back to those clean basics, you know, and clean, you know, if it's a whole food, eat it, you know, if it's water, drink it. If the sun's out, you know, let's go out for a walk and move our bodies. So it's we can achieve, Pete, and I truly believe this, just by going back to the basics. And, you know, what you just said again a moment ago is that's sometimes the hardest thing for people to do, because it requires a lifestyle change, and we have to make some time for that within our day to be able to obviously enjoy the outdoors and just bring our stress levels down and bring it all back.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's going back to, as you say, perhaps, you know, those earlier days when all the stresses and trials of life were somewhat less. Time's catching up with this, but just very quickly, I read, absolutely fascinated with blood type life, in the fact that I thought, like everybody, you just got your blood type and that's it. But obviously there's a whole lot behind it in terms, depending on which blood type you are.
Absolutely right, Pete. Yeah. And that's why I specialize in blood type and I love it so much. So when you're looking at blood type, and obviously we've got blood type O, we've got A, we've got B, and we've got AB. So there are disease risk factors around each blood type. So again, when I'm looking at a person, I will always ask the blood type, and we're really looking at kind of foods that would be suitable for their blood type. And sometimes I think it was a bit overhyped, and people always delve into the lectins. But when we pull this back, what we really have is an immune response when we eat something, because obviously we might have the A antigen or the B antigen, and then we've got something coming in that will lock on to that A or B antigen, for instance. And this can cause what we call agglutination within the body. So we can have cells clumping together. And if we have cells clumping together, the immune system will come in because it doesn't want to see a clump, and it will start to destroy them. But in the process of that, obviously, it's quite inflammatory. So if we've got a lot of that going on, we're quite inflamed. But just to kind of give you a, if you like, relative here to dementia, it is clinically proven. And again, I can send you the studies after this, Pete, if you want to share them with your audience, that blood type AB does have a higher risk for cognitive impairment, dementia, and Alzheimer's. And then we have blood type B followed by that, and then blood type A. So not to obviously frighten any audience or anybody, but if we just kind of peel that back, why perhaps might that be? Well, we actually have, if we've got the A antigen, which obviously is in the AB, we've actually got more clottier and stickier blood to start with. And that's due to there's two clotting factors within the blood, and type A's are scientifically recognized to have higher clotting factors. So obviously then we're looking at vascular, perhaps diseases, clotting, embolisms, things like that. And then we look at blood type B that just do tend to have a higher risk of neurodegenerative disease. So yes, it's absolutely significant in terms of what blood type you are, but it doesn't mean that you are going to develop those diseases. It just means you might have a higher risk factor. So again, we're peeling it back and saying, look, let's look at your lifestyle. Let's look at your diet. Let's look at your stress, your social connections, etc. You know, because personally, I'm a blood type O. So we might think, great, that's great, Nikki. But, you know, equally, you know, I could develop it if I carried on eating like I was and living like I was. That could be one of my risk factors. You know, but obviously being a blood type O, I have other risk factors that are different. So, you know, perhaps my thyroid might give out before blood type A's, for instance. So, yeah. So just looking at blood type P, it's really, really key when we're looking at a person's health, you know. And if anybody wants to go away and look at science, you know, there's over 70,000 studies in PubMed on blood type, and it's still being studied today.
That's absolutely fascinating. And yeah, if you know, if you can send me some more stuff, that'd be really great. It's been great, Nikki. I've learned a lot. I hope our listeners have learned a lot. And thank you so much for sharing it with us. And, you know, maybe in 6 months or so we can catch up again with, you know, latest developments and what's been happening.
That sounds great, Pete. Thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
My thanks to Nikki for such a great chat. And if you want to find out more, take a look at the website www.bloodtype.life. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for another D Word podcast.